Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, smartphones are pretty ubiquitous around the world these days, and they're also getting a lot less expensive. So they can be used to bring some capabilities to some underserved parts of the world. And today we'll be talking about some of those.
In particular, we'll be speaking about a portable eye examination kit called PEEK. We'll speak with founder and director Dr. Andrew Bastouris and lead software developer Richard Evans about how the system works and how it's being deployed. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Andrew.
I suppose my tip of the week is if you're planning to build an organization this week, build it around the people you plan to serve and just keep that as the focus.
Well, that seems to have been working really well for you guys, and we certainly hope you have a lot of success. It's a great thing you're doing.
And we'll hear how they are bringing this new technology and service to people around the world with visual problems.
Let's start by meeting Andrew and Richard and learn what prompted the development of PEEK.
I'm Andrew Bastouris and I work at PEEK Vision.
Richard Evans, also PEEK Vision, software development.
And tell us about your roles there.
So I'm one of the co-founders of PEEK and I'm also an ophthalmologist. And so my work is really being clear around where the issues are in terms of eye care globally and making sure that as a team we're cohesive and building tools and processes that are trying to meet a big unmet need.
And Richard, what's your role?
I work in the software area and I kind of lead the team, the software development team.
So Andrew, you said you're an ophthalmologist, so I presume you've had some contact with visually impaired people in the past, but what got you involved in this particular effort to help underserved parts of the world?
I've spent a lot of my kind of working life working in sub-Saharan Africa, and despite having trained as an eye surgeon in the UK, my interest was always in international development. And it was through the repeated experiences of seeing this common problem in all the different places that I worked where there were curable conditions that people were unnecessarily blind from, and seeing the impact it was having not just on them as an individual but their entire family and community really frustrated me, and I wanted desperately to try and do something.
And Richard, how did you get into working for PEEK?
Serendipity, really. Andrew met somebody who had met me. He was looking for somebody to kick off the software development or take it forward. And I had just reached a stage in my career where I was interested in the change of focus. I'd worked for commercial companies for many years. And so we hooked up and it worked out.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is PEEK, the Portable Eye Examination Kit.
So maybe you can give our listeners a quick overview of what PEEK is, and then we can talk about some of the specifics later on.
Sure. PEEK really came out of becoming aware that most people who need access to eye care are not receiving it. So they tend to be based in rural, remote areas in low- and middle-income countries. And the few people who can provide the treatment tend to be based in towns and cities. And the issue isn't that there's no treatment, there's actually very good treatment, and most conditions are treatable or preventable. And so we are building products and services that enable us to close that gap. And they include software apps for measuring vision. They include pieces of hardware which turn your smartphone into a device that can see inside the eye. And then systems that connect that information to make sure when we capture that information in the field, it's taken and used so that those who can provide treatment become aware of those people and we ensure they are tracked all the way through to receiving the treatment they need.
Now, PEEK is an acronym. What does it stand for?
It stands for the Portable Eye Examination Kit.
So I guess smartphones have really opened up opportunities to do some of these things that one wouldn't be able to do otherwise without expensive equipment. Can you talk a little bit about how this all works?
Sure. So in those places where the greatest queues of patients would be were usually where there was least infrastructure. So no roads, no electricity, no water. But saying that, most of those places had mobile signal. And so one of the things I was looking to do was, rather than create a solution from scratch, it was piggyback something that already worked and was already providing access to something else. And given that you could go into the most remote parts of Kenya, as an example, and still see people utilizing a phone, really got me thinking that it would be possible to change all of the tests that we were doing in the eye clinic and deliver them on a phone, knowing that that information could then be connected to someone who could at least interpret it and make a decision. And so really that's where it came from. It was the opportunity to piggyback an existing infrastructure that worked.
And what exactly needed to be done here? I mean, you can't just walk up to somebody with a phone and do an eye exam. You had to add some hardware, some specialized software. Can you talk a little bit about the details of how it's all put together?
Before even putting any of the software together, one of the things that we do is we make sure that there is capacity to provide treatment. Because what we don't want to do is deliver a screening tool that identifies people, but then they have nowhere to go. So we spend a lot of time making sure there is resource to provide treatment to the people that we find. And then we've gone through a series of trials over the last 5 years where we've looked at every component of it, from the vision test, where we've tested on several thousands of people who've had the test on the smartphone version as well as the standard test that you'd have in a normal hospital. And we've learned lots of lessons. We've made lots of mistakes. We've rebuilt it multiple times to make it into something that can work almost universally in any language and in the hands of anyone without much training.
I've actually found several other apps for smartphones that purport to do vision acuity testing, but yours strikes me as being kind of the most fail-safe. Can you describe how it functions for our listeners?
Sure. So what we do is we show a letter E on the screen, and that E changes in size and orientation. And what we ask the tester to do is to show the patient that E on the screen, and the patient points whichever way the E is. And the advantage of this is the tester is purely responding to the patient. So they would swipe the screen in the direction the patient points without actually having to know what's on the phone. And that means they become objective, because in a normal test, you're having to look at the chart, look at the patient, know if they're giving you the right or wrong answer, record in your mind where you are in the chart. You also have to know when to stop the test. And you also have to be careful that smart patients will remember it from one eye to the next, or they may come in and learn it quickly like I did as a child. So the phone makes all of those things no longer possible. So the quality of the test is actually much higher. And we built in all sorts of gestures, such as if the patient shakes their head to say they can't see it, we can shake the phone that records they can't see it. We use the light meter on the phone, which normally alters your screen brightness based on whether you're inside or outside. And based on the studies and trials that we did, we know there's a cutoff at which the test no longer is accurate. And so the tester is fed back that information that they need to go into somewhere more dimly lit. So there's a lot of thought that's really gone on to evolve it to make sure that we're giving the accuracy of the results that we can be confident to share widely.
In the traditional eye exam that you get in the doctor's office, in the U.S. we say we're 20 feet away from the screen. In the rest of the world, you say 6 meters. How do you set the distance from the screen to the person being examined?
This is where the software could be quite clever. So depending on the distance you're at, the size of the letter being displayed can be configured. And so we have it so that you run the test at either 3 meters or 2 meters. There's lots of reasons for why we chose those. But it was largely down to making sure it was a practical test, given that a lot of people's homes are very small and doing a test at 6 meters was not feasible in the absolute majority of them. What we do is we have a whole load of built-in instructions that ensure once you're at the right distance, you continue to test at that distance. And the phone effectively does all the hard work and does all the calculations to give you your result at the end.
So what types of eye conditions are you screening for, and what solutions, you know, are likely to happen as a result of some of these tests?
So we don't screen for conditions per se. We are looking for who needs to be receiving either further assessment, and then from that, who needs to be receiving specific treatment. And so what we do is we look at a population rather than a disease, and we can configure our tests to make sure we're picking up the key conditions for people in that population. And that can either be based on a vision level or response to certain questions. And what happens then is those people are then effectively channeled into a care pathway where we can track them through to make sure they receive the appropriate decisions and treatments at the right points.
So basically you're trying to sort people and get them to the right person so they can receive the proper treatment for whatever condition they eventually might have.
Exactly. And the most common things we end up identifying in the process are refractive errors in children, so those needing glasses who don't have access to them, and cataracts in the elderly.
So one of the other features of your, I call it a device, it's a smartphone with an attachment, is that it has a special lens on it, and then you can actually use it as an ophthalmoscope and view the back of the eye. I assume that's for assessing other conditions as well?
Yeah, so our vision screening test will tell you that someone has a vision problem. Being able to image inside the eye can help understand why they have a problem. And so it enables us to look at various things, including the nerve of the eye, which gives you information about conditions such as glaucoma, but also the health of the brain. Certain brain conditions represent in the nerve at the back of the eye. We can also look at the blood vessels and the retina, which can identify conditions like macular degeneration, but also help us pick up non-eye specific conditions such as diabetes that have manifestations and other conditions that you can see signs of in the retina.
So is this based on imaging software that's on the phone, or you actually send the image back to a trained ophthalmologist somewhere to look at it?
So there's a variety of uses for it. One of the advantages is we have effectively decoupled the need to interpret the image that you're seeing. Because if that's the case, you require highly trained people to be out in the field who can not only see it, but can interpret it and make a decision on it. By being able to have non-eye trained people acquire images, that can then be shared with the fewer people who are trained to interpret it and make a decision. So we do have a service whereby people are capturing images in primary healthcare clinics on patients with diabetes, and then in the local central hospital, somebody's having a look at those images and making decisions, which is automatically then reported back to the patient via SMS.
And who in general do you expect to be giving the tests? I mean, you say they're non-trained people. Are these government agency people or volunteers, or who are the people giving the tests?
There's a wide variety. So from our program in Kenya, we have teachers screening in schools. In Botswana, we have vaccination nurses doing it. In Tanzania, we have general nurses and doctors doing it. So it's really a wide variety. And we don't specify the job description, if you like. It's more that a certain skill set is required, which we either need to train to make sure they're at that point, or they may already be at that level where they can do the necessary bits.
So there is a little bit of training involved in administering these tests to make sure they're done properly.
Yeah, there's a significant amount of support, both around training to use the tools, but also making sure they're used within the context of an appropriate system. And by that, I mean ensuring that people who are identified are sent on for treatment. And also just being aware that technology doesn't solve everything here. We need to make sure that people doing the screening are courteous and thoughtful when examining someone, because there's lots of other barriers to people receiving treatment. You know, they're often very anxious about having an examination. They may be concerned about the results. So there's a lot of support and training that needs to go into making sure we are ultimately good human beings when delivering.
And I'm wondering how your outreach program works and how you network with people in these rural areas, how they're likely to find out about these tools and resources.
To date, most of our interest has come through working with the International Center for Eye Health, where lots of the leading people worldwide who are running prevention of blindness programs have come through and had training there. So we have a large community of people involved in this space, and we're really trying to build partnerships and work with partners. to understand their situation on the ground and build it appropriately. And to date, the community work is only going on in Kenya and is undergoing an extensive trial at the moment to really prove that it works before we then start to look to take that wider in the way we're now doing with the school program.
So you're sort of in the initial stages of getting this rolling now. How is it being received?
It's been very positive. Our issues have been that demand is massively outstripping our ability to supply. So we only have one Richard, and Richard is supported by Vince and Alex on our software development team. But we really need a much bigger team to do all the things that we would like and aspire to do. But we just have to be careful and thoughtful about how we build that team and maintain quality in what we're doing. And so those are really our focus at the moment, is ensuring that we grow carefully and start to meet the demand that we're receiving.
So England and Kenya aren't very close together. Do you have people in Kenya who are doing all of the training and whatnot, or do you have to fly people back and forth?
Everything is done locally. We will provide training to a small number of core people who effectively own and run the program, and then they will train a much wider team. So we have Dr. Rono and Cosmos, who are leading the program in Kenya, and they've trained a wide number of teachers as well as now community healthcare workers to do the programs.
Oh, so that's great. So that means expanding into another territory or another country just means you need to find a couple of core people that you can train and have them run the program from there.
Yeah, exactly. So we're building our processes to enable things to scale. So we've recently been very lucky to have someone called Karen join us, who's leading on supplying the kind of resources and training so that those local project managers can be supported and delivered at scale.
And we should note that you and Richard are located in the United Kingdom.
We are indeed.
So I'm curious, Richard, what was special or challenging about developing the software for these applications?
Well, a lot to do in a short time was one of the challenges. It wasn't specific to this organization. We found that whilst Andrew's been doing work for a long time in defining the outline of the software that was needed to support, we found that there's been a lot of discovery as we go. Needs vary from place to place. Skills vary from place to place. So we're learning all the time and iterating fast.
There must be a lot of iteration required as people are learning to use the system and find different ways that it might be used, different failure mechanisms and things like that, I guess, huh?
That's exactly right. So I'm in close contact right at the moment. We're in the middle of the Botswana program, and I meet regularly with the people who are out there in the field running the program, and we're discussing how I can help them, how I can change the software so they can operate more easily. They come up with some new challenges, and we see if we can help them face them. Not all of them are obviously problems that we can solve in software, but some of them are.
And I take it these programs work primarily on Android devices, because that's most common in the world, or...?
That's right. So the software is divided into the software that's running on the handsets, which, as you say, are Android devices, largely. We will be developing iOS versions as well. But there's also software on the receiving end. So we go out in the field to collect the data, and data is transmitted back to a central server where the program can be monitored in real time as it's going, so we can spot problem areas like unusual distributions of positive results, for example. It might indicate that somebody's having trouble using the app. And also, it's a repository from which we can glean intelligence reports that help set policy according to the prevalence of different conditions in the local geography.
So that raises an interesting question. What kind of response have you been getting from the local governments and the local medical providers?
The response has been really positive. We are aware that as Peak, we can't do anything without partners. And our partners include Ministries of Health, Ministry of Education, and a variety of really good NGOs that are working on the ground. And so we're really kind of building with them and for them. And the response has been really positive. And we're learning lessons from them. You know, we don't get everything right. We are trying more and more to understand what the needs are at different levels, both from a policy level down to a program level, to the economics of it. How do you cost a program? How do you ensure you have the right human resources? And so it really is about collaborating and learning from them as much as being able to provide something which extends their reach.
And that raises another question. Who funds your organization? Are you a charitable organization or government funded or what?
So we are a social impact organization made up of two entities. So we are a for-profit company that's 100% owned by a UK charity. And so the engineering work and the service that we deliver is through the company. If the company gets to a point in the future where it's generating income that's over and above the running costs, that money is returned to the charity, which can then use those funds to support people on the ground. Our current funding comes primarily from the Queen Elizabeth Diamond Jubilee Trust, and then some other funding from other sources, which include the Seeing is Believing initiative through Standard Chartered Bank. We've received smaller grants or awards from several other bodies, which is really what has enabled us to build what we're now doing.
Do you expect to get funding ultimately from the governments or other organizations in the countries where you're operating? It sounds like most of your funding is coming from the UK now.
Yeah, that's where we're aiming to get to. We want to make sure we have something that's of such high value that it makes sense at a government level to be investing in it. So we see those as the clients that we want to be working with, because there's a lot of information known that if you invest in eye care, your return is huge, both economically and socially. However, the person putting in that investment is rarely the person that gets it out. It's at a broader population level. And so your funder for this really does need to be government for it to succeed. And so we're looking to generate a sustainable social impact model, working primarily in low and middle income countries, to ensure the long-term sustainability of what we're doing.
So as we discussed, smartphones are pretty ubiquitous around the world, and that's what makes this approach so attractive for doing these eye exams. What is the cost per unit? There's, you know, software is usually or can be pretty inexpensive, but there is some hardware requirements in terms of the lenses.
So the honest answer to that is I don't know. There's a lot of different costs depending on how we're delivering the program. We'll be releasing various components, and the first thing that we released on World Sight Day to a smaller number of people was peak acuity, our vision test, and that has been released for free. And over the next few months, we'll be releasing that wider and wider. It is a medical device, so it has to undergo various certification procedures, and we therefore can't release it worldwide all at once. The peak retina adapter will be available in early 2017. We haven't defined the final cost for that yet, because now we don't fully know what our internal costs are to make sure we can get that in people's hands. But the plan is to ensure it's affordable to those who will be needing it, and we will define that further as time goes on. And then as far as our programs go, that's really on a per customer basis at the moment. We're really in a phase of learning, and so we're not charging at a commercial rate, if you like. We're really more just ensuring we cover our costs to build the tools and learn the lessons that we need.
Well, great. That sounds like a great program.
Now for this week's final item, how to get more information about PEAK.
So for people that want to find out more about the PEAK program and or obtain these tools themselves in some parts of the world, where would you send them?
If they go to our website, which is www.peakvision.org, that's peekvision.org, all the information is on there, and that site will be continually updated. We also have a newsletter that which can be subscribed to on the website, where we'll be sending out regular updates.
And are you looking for other people to get involved or volunteers?
At the moment, yeah, we're certainly looking to build the core team primarily. And almost one of the challenges we've had is a lot of offers for people to volunteer. And we haven't yet had the capacity to make sure we can line up the very generous offers that we have with the needs on the ground and our needs as an organization. So we've actually recently had someone called Adriane join us, who's a Peruvian medical doctor with a business background, who's helping us build that program so that we can start to accept the generous offers that we're getting and maximize them to ensure that they line up with local needs, the needs of the person going out, and also us to learn lessons from it.
If people have questions or comments, is there an email address they can send them to?
Sure, yeah. Inquiries at peakvision.org is monitored every day, so we're happy to answer any questions that people have.
And just to make sure we have the spelling correct, it's Enquiries.
And do you have a social media presence?
We do. We're on Twitter and Facebook. At Peak Team is our Twitter account, and Facebook is Peak Vision.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you for making the time to interview us.
Thank you guys very much, and keep up the good work. It used to be that people had to customize and make all these specific tools in the past, and now people are taking advantage of essentially commercially available items to make low-cost testing and other equipment that can be very useful.
Thank you.
So if you're looking for any of the contact information in the show, as usual, go to the show notes for this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net, and it will all be there. I also wanted to mention a related episode of Eyes on Success in which we talked with the CEO of an organization called Help Me See. This organization has developed some low-cost and quality methods for eliminating blindness due to cataracts around the world. And if you're interested in listening to that show, you should use the search tool on our website to look for episode 1611 or put Help Me See in the search field, and you'll come up with links to the audio and show notes as long as a summary for that show. So use that search tool. It can be very useful for finding topics of interest or specific shows.
That's it for show number 1645. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about studying law in India. We'll talk with Rahul Bajaj, a blind law student who grew up in a rural village of India. He describes some of the cultural and social barriers faced by the blind in India, the limited availability of assistive technologies and government support, and how he has overcome these challenges. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.